everybody. Welcome to Gig. I'm your host, Mike Redman. You know, I don't actually watch a lot of TV, but I do love an entertaining, well-written, and produced show. I'm not sure how I stumbled upon White Lotus, but it would be one of my top favorites for a must-see. They take chances. It has smart humor, and moreover, some of the most original, accessible, and inviting music on television. The composer behind the score of White Lotus is Chilean-Canadian film composer Cristobal Tapia de Vere, or as I've come to know him, Cristo. Cristo is not what you might think of as a typical film composer. What I mean is that he's an experimenter, creating sounds from nothing, combining textures, defining rhythms, and finally happily marrying them to picture, doing more than creating an ambience. Cristo's music helps to define a scene or cue. It helps to breathe life into it. Yep, I really like his music and I'm happy to spend a little time with him today. So without further ado, let's jump right in. Well, hi, Cristo. It's so nice to have you on Gig with me. And I really appreciate you taking a little time out of your composing schedule to let my listeners know a little bit more about you.
Thank you for having me. No problem.
This is very cool for me. I've listened to you for a long time, actually. But Mark Kamine, the executive producer of White Lotus, he thinks the world of you, both you and your music. Would you talk a little bit about what it's like to work on the creative side of a TV project?
In this particular one or generally?
Just in general, you know, what it's like to work in that world.
For me, I had a lucky start, maybe, mm-hmm. in the sense that I got to work with a British director who, by accident, I met him in Montreal. He was shooting something for the BBC, and he was just listening to local musicians, composers, and he heard an album that I did, and so he called me, and I met him, and that's pretty much how I got introduced into this world. So Mark Munden, it's his name. He's more on the left side of things. He experiments a lot. He makes more artsy projects and stuff like that. And I didn't know him at all, or the world of British television and all that. But I realized at some point that what he was doing was more of a special artistic thing. And so because I started working with him, I got used to that kind of that way of working, where he would ask me, he was interested in eccentricities, the special things, the weird stuff and things like that. So he would push me in that direction. And then the work that I did with him, which one of the shows that I did with him was called Utopia, that kind of put me in a place where people were calling me because mm-hmm. of that, because of the, they wanted something special for their show or edgy or whatever. So it kind of defined the way I work and the people I work with. I think it's lucky in the sense that I don't know that I could do this job in another way, where like if I tried to do, let's say, I was never trying to get into this world of scoring.
So I ask everybody this: if we look back 10 years, I asked a lot of folks that I knew, where was music going, you know, what was going to happen. And only one person got it right. You know, how are we going to listen to music? And it was Todd Rundgren. And he said, subscription. And he was the only guy that got it right. And so today my question is different, though. What do you think is going to happen in music composition arena or landscape now that AI has become a player?
I don't know how long it's going to take before, you know, you can actually see a person in front of you and you don't know that this person is a robot.
Ooh.
I think it might be, you know, a little bit before that happens. But this can happen in a screen, that's for sure, or, you know, chatting with someone. Whatever it's in a computer, you could be fooled. I think this happens with music, but particularly with anything that is standardized is more at risk of, let's say, a human being replaced by AI. Yeah. Because if you're doing something, this is why when you see songs by, you know, AI, like some Drake song or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever, with auto-tune and any kind of music, that is very easy to see how it's constructed and it really does help if the voice is very much treated in a way that it sounds robotic and all mm-hmm. that. Like, for example, Batman. Yeah. And you have this plugin that helps you to do that. And in 50 seconds, this guy starts with the percussion. And then this trumpet. And in 50 seconds, you have this track that sounds like, oh, shit, this could be in Batman, actually. Maybe. I mean, it's not it's not exactly that. Of course, it's not great. But it sounds so close to that and in such little time that I found that really, really scary. Mm-hmm. I would be scared if I wanted to be in that world with that sound, because they can standardize things in a way that, you know, they almost don't need you So as far as the people who pay you and companies and the big CEOs and all that, mm-hmm. it's a well-known fact that anyone they can replace, they're trying to replace the writers, yes. the this and sure. that. So you have to think about that. You know, it's not like a paranoia thing that, you know, Terminator, we're being replaced by robots. It's a real thing where, you know, people who are paying, they're going to try to not pay humans. You know,
that's funny. That's a really, really interesting, good answer. In a way, one of the things I heard you say is like, musicians, be careful of using all the AI tools because you're replacing yourself.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you're pushing yourself right out of a job. So, oh my God. So spend the time becoming original and harder to copy, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Was there a time for you when you were, you know, doing your own style without trying to fall back on your education and your, you know, formal training, that you said, you know what I'm doing is on the right path because people do believe in me and what I'm doing?
I mean, I don't know. I'm often wrong when I think that if I make sometimes I make a batch of music for a film, and then I think that's really the thing, and I don't know. It feels like it's perfect for that.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow the producers or somebody in the project they complete in a completely different place.
Yeah.
That is hard to deal with because in one side I'm thinking now that I've done a few projects,
mm-hmm.
I could say that maybe they got scared or they don't want to try stuff. blah, blah, blah. But on the other side, they could be right that, or they have the right to take the projects wherever they want to take it. You know,
sure.
if they want serious music for something, and I was making something too out there. I mean, it's a choice, but I have to. It's hard to balance because I have to question that because I don't think I'm just hired to do whatever they want. I think I'm hired to help in whatever way, you know, I feel like things could be better or more or, you know, give some dimension or something. And yeah, and maybe sometimes that needs a little pushing. People, it's hard for them to accept it right away. So you know how much to push for how long, I don't know that you know, it's shaky.
Yeah, you would think that producers and companies that hire you know what you do. What you're going to do is going to be different than the last show, but it's going to be different, and it takes them, they have to be brave enough to stand up to the, you know, the powers that be and say, look, this is exactly what we need. And so much in film and TV, the formula does not allow that to happen, right? You know, and so they get scared and they start backing off. One time met with Disney and the head of music said, so, you know, are you good? And I said, well, I'm okay. And he goes, well, come back when you're good. Let's get down to it. You have great taste in clothes. Every picture, when somebody Googles you and you show up in the images, you look really, really cool. No, you look great. You know, you just look like somebody that everybody would want to meet and hang out with. Yeah, I think so. I think so. So is that by design? Like, do you have just naturally good taste, or do you have somebody that dresses you like I do?
It's so funny, you know. There's when the White Lotus came out, I had to send some pics for, you know, Variety or whatever, Hollywood Reporter, I don't know, stuff like that. And I'm mostly in the countryside. And I have no. I don't have any kind of setup of or team of people or anything like that. and I thought, you know, we went out, and it was me and Kim, Kim, who also did some music on the second season of The White Lotus. And she was there, and we went out, and she put this costume, this golden costume. She did a yoga pose, like upside down. And I was just wearing whatever, this Hawaiian you know, shirt that I have, and some joggings. We went out. I put the phone on the floor, and with a timer, and we did two or three pics, and that's it. And I just sent that, and it just happened that it was sunny, the light was right, whatever. And then that became like the official White Lotus pick. So it generally is like that. It's just whatever, you know. There's no preparation.
That's funny, because it sure doesn't look like that. Yeah, it looks like they did a photo shoot for those shots, you know.
Wow.
Is kind of off the subject, but you know, White Lotus and TV series are like far cry from Super Sex World with your band One Time. And that's a fun song. I listened to it yesterday, and
really?
you produced that record, and did you also play on it? What did you play on the song?
Synthesizers, you know, programming beats, whatever, you know, sounds.
That was cool. I don't know what it is about Canadian composers. I've worked with many composers through my career from Canada, and there's a romantic creative sensitivity, like to the music, that I haven't found anywhere else. I mean, that's more of a statement than a question, you know. Yeah. But you have a really organic and original sound, Christo. It's it's very much to me. It's like Jimi Hendrix or something, you know. Within a few notes, I guess that it's you behind the curtain. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Is that something that you kind of work to develop, or is that just your natural creative energy that flows out that way?
No, I didn't. Honestly, it's often very scary to do a score. Mm-hmm. Like the first projects that I did, where I really didn't know if this was going to be, you know, like a career or something. Mm-hmm. I was just trying to do this. And I was mostly just scared that, you know, nothing made sense and, you know, it was going to be rejected and all that. So I didn't have any, I really wasn't conscious that first it could even connect with sure. the audience or anything like that. And I suppose it's the feedback from projects coming out and the feedback mm-hmm. from the people, from audiences, and also some people that I work with that, because they tell me that they like a certain thing and I mm-hmm. They like some things that I'm doing and to push that further and stuff like that, then I understand what those sounds mean to them. So I somehow discovered that myself. So it's mostly because of those people that I got to understand what I was doing. But I didn't have a plan to what I was doing. It was basically just like surviving, I suppose. trying to get away with stuff.
I know what you mean. It's very much like, I think as musicians, especially as composers, we all feel this sense of imposter syndrome. Like we don't know what the hell we're doing, but God, I hope they like it. Your music is kind of a music and sound design, you know, interlocked.
Yeah.
And I would imagine, does it take you more time to compose an episode for TV because of the amount of experimentation that you need to do?
Yeah. Sometimes I feel like it takes me too long in the sense that I spend too much time looking for sounds or stuff mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. But it really depends. I mean, I don't know if it takes me too long, but I feel like sometimes maybe I overwork for example, it happens often that a melody or a theme that you know ends up in the show and it works and all of that. That could have taken 5 seconds to do. Mm-hmm. Out of hours of doing stuff that you know, maybe I was in a space where I was really working seriously about some idea. Mm-hmm. But then the thing that I did as a joke, you know, that I literally, you know, I recorded, for example, a MIDI track on a synthesizer. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even correct afterwards, like re-record it with mm-hmm. a or something, you know, I sometimes send that as is. Mm-hmm. So it literally takes 5 seconds to do. The thing is that it's all the rest of the work that went to the trash. Like if I could just do, you know, it would be a very lucrative business. If I could take 5 seconds to do something and that's it, you know. Uh-huh. I'm done. I didn't almost do any kind of work, you know. So it can be very fast, but it's just sometimes there's like too much time wasting, maybe thinking about stuff. So I suppose lately I've been trying to focus on doing things fast, not because of time, but because things just sound better.
Yeah, sometimes I understand exactly what you're saying. Sometimes we fiddle with it and tear it apart and correct, quantize it, and when the performance the first time was perfect.
Yeah.
Christo, what's the toughest part for you of being a musician and composer?
Probably just dealing with myself. I think because I'm always relearning how to, you know, negotiate with people, with producers, with the director, and how you know, in all these discussions about finding the right direction, all that. You know, trying to relax, learning to relax, I find it hard.
Yeah, is that partially because of, I mean, I always say that, you know, us as musicians, if you're working on the kinds of projects that you do, we're the last in the food chain. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, so the pressure is always on to get it done, get it done, get it done.
Yeah.
Hey, did you ever play drums in a band?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
I did forever ago. I just interviewed a friend of mine, if you've heard of a band called 38 Special, but they're still around. And did you enjoy that, just playing in a band like that?
Oh yeah, that's I mean, jamming with people, like in a whatever, in a party situation or just a place where there's lots of people and playing around, I think is one of the most fun things ever for a musician. And then playing live also, I really liked playing for people and being close to an audience.
Yeah.
Even more, like I enjoyed more small venues where you can see the people than a really big place or a kind of stadium situation where it's like you're playing for yourself because people are so far away that
just lights. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a cloud of, you know, noise and lights. So I think I enjoy the connection with other people that are playing and also in an audience. Yeah.
What's the most important thing to keep in mind if you want to be a commercial composer?
For me personally, I feel like music needs to animate whatever is on the screen. And for me, what has worked, at least, is really what's really animating and making things fun, for a lack of a better, you know, description.
That's good.
So that things feel like fluent or fluid and entertaining. I mean, music has to be entertaining, I suppose.
If I were a student in a music program in a university, what advice, you know, being in the business for a while, might you give me to help me open a few doors when I graduate?
For sure, people need to somehow listen to what you've done. For me, that's the only thing that has worked. It's because people heard, it's like a word of mouth. Kind of thing, but I was never actively doing something or had an agent, you know, pushing or something like that. So right. I don't know that much about that. But sometimes it could be as as easy as somebody on a social network who happens to click on your track. And, but from the moment somebody is able to hear something that you did, that's like everything. Because the talking and all of that stuff, people have too much to do. And so much, you know, patience and ears to whatever people are telling them. But I feel like when they hear something that moves them, that's when they call. So, yeah, I suppose.
Just spend as much time as you can getting your music out there.
That's
different advice than I've gotten before, but it's also extremely relevant because you might be a great salesman, but until somebody hears your music, they're not going to select you. Christo, thank you so much. I really appreciate taking out the time before you go up and create a horror film up in the hills. It's really been a pleasure. I hope to get to meet you sometime. I really honest to God love what you do. I think you're a really brave composer.
Thank you so much.
You know, you do what you do, you know what I mean? And that, man, that's what sets you apart. So I love it. And I hope to talk to you again sometime.
Very nice. Well, if you come to Canada, you want to visit the mountains, you know, if you like hiking and stuff.
Yeah.
It's a good place here for that.
Okay. I may take you up on that.
Yeah.
I will do that.